Rubbity totally dinky doodle.
You were terrible. I'm still one. I love it.
Honey lad,
let's go examine again.
Who paid for the nachos?
Nor rain, nor wind, nor snow classico.
Boarding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard, and it is Decision Day Plus One, Monday, October 10th, 2022. The 2022 Colorado Rapids season is over. Diego Rubio has officially tied Connor Casey of 2009 for the single season club record for goals scored with 16. Rabbi and I now have to come up with something else to do on Saturdays, World Cup, Temple, and ski season notwithstanding. And we have heard for the last time on Altitude Sports, Marcella Balboa and Richard Fleming call a Colorado Rapids game. Joining me now, a man who knows what dog so and offsides look like when he sees them, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
I do, and I will be yelling about them in the postseason in neutral matches with aplomb and with verve. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, Rabbi. I'm tired. I really enjoyed Decision Day yesterday, and I thought it mostly lived up to the hype and was fairly exciting given how little needed to be decided. We already knew who the Supporters Shield champion was going to be. We had seven teams vying for four remaining playoff places. And so I think it was fitting that of those seven teams, six of them were playing in effective six-pointers because you had RSL versus Portland, Minnesota versus Vancouver, and then Orlando and Columbus. And then even the games that just slightly had a little bit going on, you know, the only games that were really super boring were the very dead rubbery ones. You know, like I think New England-Chicago was maybe the only game that I would say from yesterday that had absolutely nothing going on in it. So, you know, given that I was, you know, at times, you know, had three screens going with games going on with how little exciting that was going on. I always really like Decision Day. The way that we have it at Last Word on Sports, I always like covering Decision Day. And I prefer covering it when the Rapids are away because then I'm not just focusing on the Rapids game and scoreboard watching with FotMob or constantly uploading MLSsoccer.com. I'm able to do it watching three games simultaneously. I will admit that the Eastern Conference probably had the better narrative, the better story ultimately by the end of it. But Rabbi, how did you enjoy it? What did you watch? What stood out for you?
I just watched the Rapids game. That was the only one. Otherwise, I was just scoreboard watching because, you know, there wasn't, like you said, there wasn't a whole lot of consequential. I went back and I looked at that, the highlights of the Columbus game, just because I wanted to see the end of Caleb Porter's term. He got fired today as a result of missing the playoffs in three out of four seasons with Columbus, and or with three out of four of the teams that he's taken, I think was the statistic. But like Caleb Porter, it's an interesting question for me with Caleb Porter. I would say like I've never been impressed with his style of managing. I've watched a lot of his matches when he was with Portland and when he was with Columbus, and I think, you know, tactically and formationally he's kind of standard. He's kind of like fairly like straightforward. There were never any like really impressive curveballs or anything like that. I mean, you know, not to take too much away from him, the guy does have an MLS Cup to his name. Two MLS Cups?
Yeah, Portland. Okay,
he won one with Columbus and won one with Portland, right? But so I guess the question I think is, does he, like, what does he do next? Like, where is he going to be next year? Is this the kind of thing where he kind of bides his time and then winds up with an expansion team in 2 years when, you know, somebody makes the jump to the big leagues? There's some talk again about Las Vegas or San Diego being the 29th team in Major League Soccer. Next year, St. Louis will jump, but they already have a full complement of everybody. So, and then if if there isn't an MLS team for him, or is he waiting around for someone to get fired? You know, will he play? Will he coach at the USL level like Steve Cherundolo did with Las Vegas Lights before he wound up in LAFC? Because that actually worked out great, and Cherundolo didn't do great things with Las Vegas. So I don't know. Matt was shaking his head. He doesn't think he's gonna, you know, sully himself and his reputation by going down to USL. But I think you got to keep your knives sharp. I think you got to keep practice. So I don't know. That was what I was thinking. Other than that, the kind of end of decision day drama where in the Western Conference, you know, Portland and Vancouver needed wins, which they did not get in order to kind of make it into the playoffs. And Minnesota and Salt Lake just limping through the back end of the season and just scraping out one last victory. But I have to say one last thing, which is having watched Austin, they were pretty solid. Having watched Salt Lake the last couple weeks, they've been pretty bad. That opening matchup is Salt Lake versus Austin. And Matt, I've never bet on a soccer match, but I have to say I am tempted to put money on Austin beating Salt Lake. The odds are terrible though. You don't make much money and you put up a lot. But I still think, like, man, Salt Lake looks like they are ripe to get plucked in the first round.
Yeah, no, all good stuff, Mark. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I was covering the red line playoff games. So seeds 5 through 7, those results in the Eastern Conference. And then for the Western Conference, for last word, I was covering seeds 1 through 4. And so I really enjoyed watching any game that ends 5-2 is super exciting. So to see Cincinnati, you know, finally make the playoffs when I think a lot of people still had them, probably would have predicted at the beginning of the season that they would be closer to winning the Wooden Spoon or even win the Wooden Spoon before they made the playoffs, I think is extremely vindicating for Pat Noonan, for that group of players. Dominic Baggi, Mark, is headed back to the MLS Cup playoffs, so I think we're happy for Dom. Mark's kind of shrugging their listeners. You know, and then, you know, I think it was all about Orlando versus Columbus, and I think that matchup was so compelling given what the two teams did midweek, where Orlando rotated heavily and got smacked by Inter Miami. Inter Miami qualified for the playoffs in a win on Wednesday for that. And then Columbus had, had a 2-goal lead at Charlotte in a game that had to be rescheduled that was abandoned from earlier in the season. And they ended up giving up the lead. And so it was just like, here we go again. And as soon as Columbus scored, I thought it was deserving because they had absolutely been the better team in the first half. But at the same time, I was like, oh, shoot, here we go again. I can't wait to see how Columbus Crew managed to lose this game 2-1. And so I thought it was extremely poetic. I thought it was extremely fitting the way Orlando clinched Facundo Torres on the penalty. And obviously them trying to do something on set pieces that led to the handball that led to the pen. And then I thought it was extremely fitting the way that Columbus ultimately, bottled it. And I thought deservingly, Mark, I know we don't really have. So Rabbi, in the NFL, the Monday after the final week of the regular season is referred to as Black Monday. And so that's when, you know, you just get an infinite number of press releases about such and such team has let such and such coach let go, usually head coaches. Like, you know, I think it's an average turnover rate of maybe 25% or so in the NFL, and about half of that is just on Black Monday every single calendar year in the NFL. So, you know, I think it's fitting that Caleb Porter, at least at time of recording, 8:32 p.m. Mountain Time, is the only head coach who's been dismissed from MLS this season. They have too much talent on that roster, Mark. They spent too much money. Cucho Hernandez is absolutely an upgrade over Giassi Zardes, and Miguel Berry, for that matter. So, you know, they need to be better than that. This should be a team that is in the top four of the Eastern Conference regularly based on talent. If you look at just, I think it was 11 points, Mark, that they dropped from a winning position, 11 points that they dropped in stoppage time from conceding, and then 25 points total that they've dropped from winning position throughout the season. You know, they just get half of that back. They're hosting a home playoff game. If they're a very good team while keeping a lead, this is a team that legitimately is competing for the Supporters Shield. So, bad for Columbus, yay for Orlando, happy for FC Cincinnati. And Mark, we won't talk about the two teams that qualified in the Western Conference. I'll throw it back to you for the last real general decision day question that I have. Mark, I'm wondering, you know, is it time finally for Portland to completely blow it up? Because Diego Tra has not been healthy. It's well understood the record that Portland has with him versus without him. It's night and day, even more so than what the Rapids were this season with and without Jack Price. Obviously, Diego Valeria is off. Sebastian Blanco is in his mid-30s mark. You know, this is a team that kind of, going back to even the final years of Caleb Porter, was hanging on to this core of Central South American players that are now in their late 30s. And just like every single year, they've kind of been hanging on. And in 2020, it seemed like it was going to be the end. And then they won the MLS's back tournament. And then 2021, is it finally going to be over? They end up hosting MLS Cup. They end up playing very poor in hosting MLS Cup. And I'm wondering if it's time to blow it up. And I have to wonder, Mark, is that something Giovanni Savarese wants to stick around for? To say nothing of the fact that I think it's a fair question this offseason whether Merritt Paulson should still own either of the soccer teams in Portland. But so I don't know, Mark, I think I just opened the door for you to say your piece on the NWSL news we had last week. I spoke about that without you while you were on rabbi duty last week, but I'm just throwing a whole can of worms to you now, Mark.
I don't have a whole lot of opinion about it. It's tragic. I actually, my take on the I think it was called the Webb report, is that there wasn't
Sally Yates report.
Yeah. That's right. The Yates report. If you've been following the scandals in NWSL for the last 2-3 years, none of it's really that surprising. I think the only thing that was revealed is who knew what and when did they know it? Kind of subtweeting, ancient 1970s political scandals. What did you know and when did you know it? I think with the Portland Timbers, I don't fundamentally believe in most sports, but specifically with soccer, in the overall concept of blowing it up. Like, there are, especially with Major League Soccer, where somebody noted the other day on Twitter that the five best teams in the Western Conference, five of the best teams in the West Conference in the Western Conference last year, Colorado, Sporting Kansas City,
Seattle.
I think the others that were mentioned were
Portland
and Vancouver are all, on the other end of the table now. You don't need to make tremendous changes to get vastly different production in a team. I think Jimmy Chara is still really good, but the rest of that team does have a lot. And I like Bill Tuilomo. Larry's Mabiala statistically has been pretty much of a sink. And Matt Doyle had a lot of really nice things to say about Ilyas Ivasic. And statistically speaking, he's been a real upgrade at goalkeeper. So there are pieces to build around on this team. Clearly, Dairon Asprilla as your starting striker, and a couple other guys like Yaroslav Nizgoda, who I said nice things about at some point in the middle of the season, and Matt laughed at me, and then Nizgoda proceeded to prove Matt right by not being particularly good. So
he did score in the one game that I saw in Portland, Mark, on the handball that didn't get called. But we'll discuss officiating and VAR in a few minutes, folks.
Yeah, I mean, there are pieces here, but yeah, you really do have to move to a team where you're not really expecting you want Diego Chara to move into a Drew Moore role. I mean, basically, you want him to be a talisman and an 80th minute stopper, but you don't really want to have to rely on him game after game. And same with Sebastian Blanco, although Blanco had a pretty decent season. So I think Portland will come back. I think they'll figure it out.
Okay, with that, Mark, let us head on to reviewing the game that the Rapids played in on Decision Day. Folks, they were at Q2 Stadium to take on Austin FC, and that game ended in a 1-1 draw. And Mark, it was not a pretty opening half. On paper, it was a back four from the Colorado Rapids, but then Sam Nicholson into a right wing back position pretty regularly dropped into a 4-4-1, or I'll even say a 4-2. And then depending on what Yappe and Rubio were doing, maybe it was a little bit of freeform jazz up top. But Alexander Ring gets chances. Sam Nicholson forced a decent save out of Brad Stuver, who's proven to be a very good goalkeeper. Sebastian Driussi appeared to score on a set piece after a redeflection, but was ultimately ruled offside by VAR. Mark, we'll get to this, but I think he was held onside by Darren Yappe. We'll see. And then in the 51st minute, Yappe had a really good chance on a corner. Darren Yappe getting his first start ever in Major League Soccer, Mark, which was very, very exciting. Jossy Zardes off the bench gets a good chance at the near post in the 73rd minute. Fagundes and Aruti forced two really good saves out of William Yarbrough, with Keegan Rosenberry making a great play on Aruti to help Yarbrough gather that rebound. And then finally, in the 79th minute, the dam broke defensively for the Colorado Rapids. Ryan Acosta getting pressed kind of makes a really bad pass to put Wilson under pressure, and then Wilson tries to pass it back to Acosta, who then gets picked by Felipe Martins, and then Acosta proceeds to barrel into him for a penalty. Driussi steps up and converts that in the 81st minute. Minute later, off of the kickoff, Diego Fagundes appears to make it 2-0. That play is ruled offsides. Market looked to be pretty clear on sides to me. I'll give you a 50-50 on the Driussi chance on the set piece in the 25th minute. I will not give you 50-50 odds on that one in the 82nd. And then fittingly, typical MLS standings, typical MLS chaos and karma buildup and everything. And then also Diego Rubio being a opportunist converts in the third minute of stoppage time off of a set piece. Lalas Abubakar heads the ball back into the mixer, and then Rubio is there on the doorstep to put it in. Game ends 1-1, and Diego Rubio gets his 16th goal to tie Connor Casey's record from 2009 for the most goals in a regular season by a Colorado Rapids player. Mark, I'll start with you. Good things from this game.
There were some nice moments of flow, and a few moments where the team kind of got into the attack and looked kind of promising. When Michael Barrios stepped onto the field, he had a really nice play down the wing that felt like it was going to result in a goal. And there were just a few other moments in this game where the team looked like they attacked at speed down the wings in ways in which I was quite pleased. There was some really nice overlap play with Estevez and Jonathan Lewis down the left side also. And overall, I thought Estevez had one of his better games as a Colorado Rapid. Those are my good points. Matt?
It was nice to see Yappe start, Mark. You know, it's been Robin Fraser and I chuckled about this in the post game and everything, where, you know, he's gotten minutes at time off the bench, but it's usually been in garbage time. The result's already decided, or the game state isn't really conducive to him going out there and playing his game and then getting good experience out there. It was kind of a, you know, go out there, show me some energy. Jossy Zardes needs, you know, 15 minutes off of his legs, as, you know, he needs to play 75 minutes tonight as opposed to 90 minutes. But then, you know, he finally gets a start in a meaningless game against a quality opponent. And what do you do? Effectively throw him into the deep end. You know, top team in the Western Conference. Driussi is trying to pat, you know, stat pad in order to win the MLS MVP. You got the atmosphere and everything, difficult environment. I didn't think he was great in the opening 30 minutes, but, you know, I think as the game went on, he got a little bit more solid. Maybe that was something that, you know, Rubio was talking him through, but just, you know, his touch, once he got the first, you know, not terrible first touch, then he was a little bit more confident. Then his hold-up play was better, and then his situational awareness in terms of spacing relative to Rubio, I thought, was a little bit better. And then I thought ultimately that accumulated into him being much more settled and more consistent in the second half. And look, he puts that ball in on the set piece and everything, and maybe we're having a very different conversation about the result in this game, or about how we're feeling, or about how Darren Yappe, you know, is setting himself up for an offseason, given how feel good the performance was and opening the scoring in Major League Soccer for the Colorado Rapids for him. And then Diego Rubio, Mark, who I thought was the main catalyst for everything that was going on attacking wise, you know, with Felipe Martins in the game in the second half. He can be very CONCACAF-y, and I thought Rubio was a gamer. He was a gamer when the team had to defend and was trying to press and just kind of absorb pressure from Austin. And I thought, you know, Rubio is very good in those situations to kind of help, you know, bunker things down and then be an antagonist to inhibit what the opponent is trying to do. And then obviously when they're trying to play out, I still think he's the single most significant offensive facilitator for this team. He has been all season, and he was in this game. And I thought fittingly, you know, he gets his one really good chance at goal right in front. It's got to be crafty. It's got to be well-timed. He's not the tallest guy and everything, but the ball is perfectly placed in there. He's going to go up and get it. He wins it. He scores his goal. He absolutely deserved to tie Connor Casey on the record. And Mark, I'll get to a really nice quote that he had about his former coach and about tying that record as well. But those are my two good things. Mark, where would you like to start with bad things, given that this was obviously not an exciting performance, but also, do we really care given it was a dead rubber match?
I put in the energy to watch this match, so I suppose I'm going to put in the energy to review it. Of course, it didn't really matter. I think one of the things that did matter, a negative, was Ralph Prisso didn't start. I think that was really disappointing. Anthony Markanic didn't start. That was disappointing for me. I think you could make the argument if you were Robin Fraser. Knowing how coaches kind of do things, you know, you want to start your best 11 players, but, or maybe you want to start a guy who has something to prove, but I can see a world where Anthony Markanic gets non-tendered in the offseason and winds up in USL, and you might ask yourself if that happens, like, why wouldn't he start the last three games of the season so you couldn't prove whether he wasn't an MLS caliber product? I mean, maybe he's just not good enough, which, you know, is the argument for why guys like Michael Edwards, you know, or Sebastian
Anderson
are down in USL and not with the senior team. But I guess the bad thing, Matt, right around the time I finished writing a full review of Danny Wilson's 2022 season, in which I noted that his defensive performances weren't that great, but they were always made up for both statistically and with the eye test with his passing. No sooner did I write those words than he makes a flubbed back side pass down the left side to, I think, Keegan Rosenberry, while under the press, after a back pass from Brian Acosta, right into the path of an Austin FC player who then stuffs it into the back of the net. Danny had a pretty fine game. He had a pretty fine season, but the mistakes cost us. And I feel like this season, losing the ball under the press at the back was a thing that happened a lot more this year than last year. It felt like last year we were just neat and tidy at the back, and we were really good actually at even taking those opportunities, those moments where we were getting pressed, and turning them into a net positive for ourselves by sucking in the defenders, stepping around them, and then playing out. Like, if you're going to high press the Rapids and you're going to put 3, 4, 5 guys into the press, once you beat them, right, once you make that outlet pass down the wing, or once you deliver a 40-yard bomb to the middle of the field, you've cut out 5 guys, and it's, you know, you've got nothing but daylight to the end. I mean, the team that we've done that against more than any other team over the last 2-3 seasons, in my experience, the team that we've wrecked in transition because they press too much, is the Galaxy. I feel like the Galaxy are often, like, and a team that the Rapids play end-to-end. There's just not a lot going on in the midfield. They just bypass or they press, and the Rapids just go right around them. We just didn't do that this year, and this game was a great example of that, where we probably could have got out of there 0-0, but we choked. And we got lucky because the referee wound up giving us a gift in the 88th minute or 87th minute with a non-red card call that ultimately ended with the Rapids scoring a goal at the death. But yeah, I mean, I guess my bad things are they didn't start the players I wanted, and my guy, Danny Wilson, dropped a turd.
Yeah, no, I'll generally agree with you, Marker. I guess it's Danny's season is perplexing to me. Like, he's the one that I probably have the hardest time, like, truly picking out. Were the issues where he looked bad on film, was that on him, or is that something else going around him? I think we can agree that for all Lawless Abubakar did offensively this season, he has regressed defensively. I think we can agree that Keegan Rosenberry hasn't been the lockdown Iron Man that we've known him to be in the last couple years. Granted, you know, he moved around a couple different positions because, you know, Robin still really liked the back three. And look, the long term, we'll get to this in a few minutes, folks, but, you know, we'll get in looking at the season as a whole, the long term answer to what do you do without Austin Trusty, I think, was an incomplete right up through this game, where clearly it was a back five with Sam Nicholson playing as a right wing back so that Keegan could be that third center back and playing on the left as opposed to the right as well. But, you know, I agree with you, Mark, that Danny generally is the best passer out of the back that they have from a center back perspective. I think the only one that's better from a playing out of the back standpoint is maybe Jack Price when he's healthy, which he was not this season. You know, but it feels like every single time there was a defensive breakdown and ultimately a goal that was conceded and Danny didn't look good, or it seemed like he was the last man off, he's yelling at somebody else. We've seen this from the run of play. We've seen this from set pieces. And so I don't know if there's something systematically that's not working, that just the people around him haven't been good, given that Danny and Jack are normally the quarterbacks on the field anchoring what they're doing defensively, or is that Danny deflecting blame for something that's been his own fault? I have no doubt it's been probably a mixture of both, in the same way that it was for Austin Trusty, where, you know, maybe the 4-minute highlights on MLSsoccer.com made him look particularly bad when goals were conceded, but I can't really put my finger on that. And so, you know, something in there isn't working, and maybe it's Danny not playing particularly well, and maybe it's everybody else around him being bad in addition to him being bad. Maybe it's something systematic, but Mark, earlier today, I released the 2022 Colorado Rapids Independent Press Corps Awards, which you can all check out, lastwordonsports.com. I will put a link in the show notes for those of you who are interested. Mark, you and I both voted. Joe Samuelson was on there. Brendan Plone, guys over at DNVR were on it as well. John Babiak from Burgundy Wave. You'd see the whole list of people who were invited to vote. But Jack Price won narrowly over Brian Galvan for injured player of the year, as in the player whose injury was affected the first team most. And so, Mark, I kind of want to highlight your question about what's gone on with Danny. I think a lot of this comes back to he hasn't had a lot of protection. And so what I said about Jack Price, quote, he's the most important player on attacking set pieces other than maybe Rubio. He's the most important player to playing out of the back. The midfield was a mess this year due to departures, inexperience, and lack of physicality. A healthy Jack Price for 34 games makes that problem a lot smaller and would have better protected a center back core that took a step back this year. If Price is healthy, this team makes the playoff. There's no doubt in my mind. End quote. That is from me. And so I'm wondering how much of this, Mark, is just, we know what Danny Wilson is. He's never been an elite 1v1 defender. At this point, I think he's either 29 or 30. He might be 30 by now. He's not going to become that player, and just simply having Jack Price and Kellen Acosta papered over his biggest weaknesses, and having Lawless Abubakar having his best year as a club player in 2021 allowed him to excel in ways that Austin Trusty having senioritis maybe made that a little bit worse. The team generally being defensively worse on set pieces made it worse, and not having the single most important player around him from a possession, from a defensive, and from a communication standpoint in Jack Price maybe undid it. But I don't think Danny was great in this one, Mark. I'm tempted to say that Brian Acosta was more at fault for the penalty, because he made the initial bad pass to put Danny in a bad position, and there was really nothing good that he could do with it other than boot it out for a throw-in or a corner, maybe. So I think they're both at fault, certainly, but Brian Acosta makes the initial bad pass, could have prevented that, and then by responding to that by barreling into Felipe Martins from behind, you know, Brian Acosta has not covered himself in glory in terms of giving up penalties so far this year. My other bad things, Mark, I didn't really like the parking of the bus and everything. I would have liked to seen them be at least a little bit more dynamic, or at least not have it in a back five with Sam Nicholson, though I think Nicholson did well for what he was asked to do in this game. And then I agree with you on not playing the kids. Ralph Prizzo not getting a start disappointed me. Markanish not getting on the field disappointed me as well. And we'll get to this in a minute, Mark. I wonder, not seeing Drew Moore play when he was on the bench for his final game of his career was maybe a little bit disappointing. But also, I think it's fitting that his final appearance was in a home victory at home in front of the Burgundy and Blue faithful, and doing that in a game against FC Dallas. I think that would have been more fitting than in the game against Austin. But if we're talking about the Austin game of the Rapids trying to get a result, I think switching to a back three with three proper center backs maybe would have helped stabilize things a little bit better in those final 10 minutes. I think Drew Moore could have done that. Mark, let's get to the officiating, because I'm struggling to come up with, in the VAR era of Major League Soccer, a worse game that I've seen officiated in MLS, Rapids related or otherwise. As I said earlier, I think it's 50-50 on whether or not the first Ryusi goal is offsides. I think Darren Yapi could have been keeping him onside, but maybe there's some angle that's going to come out from Pro or from MLSsoccer.com's instant replay series that I haven't seen yet. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that one, even though I am suspicious. But I don't think there's any question mark. Late in the game, when Driussi runs down a long ball and Lalas Abubakar directs his path into him and shoulders into him, that's dog. So that's a red card. And I still haven't seen an angle that shows that shows the Fagundes goal in which he is offside. Every single angle I've seen either makes it clear that he's onside or makes it look like, where I have to guess because the angle's not great, that he's onside. This is a poor officiated game, Mark. In that regard, I think Austin fans have a right to be upset. I think the Rapids are certainly lucky to have gotten out of there with a point, or at least gotten out of there, you know, let's say Rubio puts that last ball on the corner over the bar. I think the Rapids are lucky if it's only a 1-0 victory. I think realistically it probably should have been 2-0 and then a red card for Lawless. But, you know, I'm relieved, Mark, that it was as bad an officiating performance in one of the few dead rubber games on the day for decision day. Anything you want to say about the officiating, Mark, or shall we move on to big things?
Yeah, I don't think Pierre Luce Lauziera is going to be looking at a lot of center spot referee assignments in the near future. That's the number one ref in this match. But, you know, there is a world. I saw what he was looking at when he made a no call on Lalas Abubakar's, you know, kind of shoulder check of Driussi in the open field. Because it looked, from the first look, like a 50-50 ball where they went shoulder to shoulder. But once you kind of replay it a couple times, you realize, like, oh no, he fouled him. He fouled him on the way to the goal. And that's all there is to it. So the other calls, I think, were more regular. Like, I think that last call, because it ended in a no call that didn't get that didn't result in Austin killing off the game. And then I think the last thing is this, Matt, and it's not really about the officiating, but, you know, the fans rained down boos on the referee at the end because Austin got out with a 1-1 draw. But to be very honest, Austin choked at the end, and there's no denying that, right? Like, yeah, totally, the referees gave them an opportunity they shouldn't have had, the Rapids an opportunity they shouldn't have had, but, like, you cannot fail to defend a free kick, a corner kick, the way Austin did, and expect you're going to win Major League Soccer games. You are going to get bad ref calls, both for and against you, throughout the season and in the playoffs. And if you're going to let your guard down in the 90 plus third minute, you're going to get Rogered but good. You're just going to give up opportunities like that. So you can't do that.
You're going to get Toledo'd is what you're saying, Mark.
You're going to get Toledo'd. Actually, I felt like that was even beyond a Toledo-ing, but it's been so long since I saw a good Toledo game. I can't really define for you anymore what a Baldomero-Toledo game. For me, a classic Baldomero-Toledo game is watching him in the 35th minute make an unbelievable, like he barely touched him foul call, and then 15 minutes later have two guys just absolutely obliterate each other and have him make no call whatsoever. That's Toledo to me, is that like, there's no consistency.
And then in the 60th minute, he decides it's yellow card time and then just gives out like five yellow cards in the final 20 minutes. That is
a Baldomero Toledoing.
To your point, Mark, I'm not sure that I've ever seen a good Baldomero Toledo game, but
I've seen games where it was innocuous, where had I not known that Baldomero Toledo was refereeing, I would not have known anyone was refereeing. I've watched games where I haven't had any problems with it. There was a match the other day. There was I can't remember if it was an NCAA game or a USL game where Soren Stoika was the ref, and I find him to be mostly inoffensive and completely innocuous, and he just totally kicked a whole bunch of calls in that match. It was killer. So, oh well.
So let's move on to big thing, Mark, and the two big ones for me. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I think the way the team overall finished the season, even though they dug themselves too big of a hole, I think, you know, with 10 games to go. But I think especially with playing the final two games of the season, with playoffs already gone, the way that they performed and getting the result against FC Dallas and then getting a hard-fought draw against Austin, you know, you look at it, it's 4 points against the second and the third best team in the conference. I think that shows, I think that gives a better energy and a better ending to the season to make them feel better going into the offseason. So the two quotes that I have on that our post game, one from Robin Fraser, you know, to have one loss in our final six games, albeit it was a 4-1 against LA Galaxy, I believe, Mark. So this is Robin Fraser's thoughts on how the season ended. Quote, to have one loss in our final six games, that's a good feeling. We wanted to finish with a proper performance. The objective the past 3 weeks was to prove we're better than where we are in the table. We did that. Generally, I would agree with Robin, both on performance and on results. Rubio also said, you know, if we look at this game from a results standpoint, trying to make the playoffs, it's a point on the road when the team's been a bad team on the road against a very, very good team and a very good team at home. And then Rubio with some really just, you know, endearing and humble response to a question that was asked about him tying the single season goal record. He said, quote, knowing it's a tie with the legend Connor Casey, my former coach, it's an honor. It's great to be on his level. I need to be a champion like him. Hopefully we can do that next year. And then also we found out, Mark, in terms of the offseason, well, obviously there's exit interviews that will be coming up in this next week. This week now, Robin Fraser will be off to India to see his daughter play in the women's youth, I believe the under-17 Women's World Cup. So hopefully Robin's getting some good chicken masala or some tandoori chicken while he gets texted at 3 a.m. in the morning from Pork about some scouting report they have on some kid coming out of, coming out of the draft or something. So good for Robin to finally get some time off. Those are my two big things, Mark, highlighting the way the team ended the season that hopefully propels them forward going into their offseason preparation. And, you know, I thought ultimately the season, you know, effectively the last kick of the game was emblematic. I think it's fitting that the season ended with Diego Rubio scoring a goal in the final couple seconds to tie that record. If nothing else, as much as this season was a failure for him individually, it was a success. And to get the record the way he did, given how the game happened, was fantastic. And, you know, I think this is the... I think we can say, Mark, whenever Connor Casey or Omar Cummings had a really good season offensively, it was the two of them playing well and they had each other. When Rubio had his last really good season from a number standpoint, he had Kai Kamara playing up top and the two amplified each other. Given how inconsistent the help was and the fact that he didn't have a proper wingman, pun intended, in a Brian Galvan who was injured, or in a better Jonathan Lewis, or in a Michael Barrios, who was able to play 90 minutes, I think I feel comfortable in saying this is the single best individual Rapids attacking season by a forward in a Rapids shirt ever. Mark, big things from you.
I don't really have a whole lot of big things, or, you know, the biggest thing is the season's over. And I think from a fan standpoint, a supporter standpoint, that's where we're at, which is like, you know, we've now shifted into either I'm going to watch the MLS from a neutral standpoint, or I'm going to watch the EPL and pick a team, or I'm going to experience all there is to offer with Russell Wilson quarterbacking the Denver Broncos.
Broncos country. I'm dead inside.
Oh, no. Yeah, and here in Pittsburgh, where they're already like lining up to say fire Mike Tomlin. So, you know, and that's where it's at. I mean, like, fall in America is the diehard soccer fans stay diehard soccer fans, and everybody else turns on the throw ball. So, that's where it's at. You know, it's like pick your poison. And then for the super nerds like me and Matt, we'll be watching re-entry draft stage two to figure out what the Rapids are doing and, you know, so on. And I'll start watching NCAA soccer to see, you know, who are the promising seniors that might come out in the super draft and so on and so forth. And so that's, It's the changing of the seasons. Unfortunately, in this, which is about to be my 10th season covering Major League Soccer, I have seen far more seasons where the Colorado Rapids were not in the playoffs, and I spent the playoffs, sadly, you know, watching the weather get colder and colder, and then watching people in MLS uniforms at the final match in parkas trying to stay warm and not, you know, get frostbite, while the rest of us were just sitting around twiddling our thumbs waiting for next season to start. So I guess the other thing, you know, it's not a really big thing, but like, you know, the trailer, I guess, dropped for Leagues Cup in the last week, and I think I am now a Leagues Cup convert. I think it's going to be a fun little competition. I think the big question is, based on the format, whether the Rapids are even going to play a single team from from Mexico, or if they do, whether it'll make any difference. You know, and that'll be a good opportunity, I think, for fans.
They will play a team. Every single group of three will have at least one Mexican team based on the seating. But
I guess that's good.
For those who are wondering, I broke down the Leagues Cup format on the show last week, Solo Pod, and based on the results over the weekend, the Rapids did not finish in the top 16 for the Supporters Shield, so they will ultimately be, let me double check that, Mark, to make sure I don't get that wrong. I am correct. The Rapids finished 18th in the Supporters Shield, so they will be one of the random draws, folks, so there will be an MLS team in their group, there will be a Liga MX team in their group, and they will be drawn in based on something geographically. And then so, Mark, it's the West, the Central, the South, and the East. Rapids are definitely not East, with St. Louis City coming into MLS. I think it's highly doubtful, even if in a draw situation, that the Rapids would ultimately end up in the South. So I imagine they're either going to be in the West or they're going to be in the Central. And given that Real Salt Lake finished 14th in the Supporters Shield standings, Mark, I think there's a decent possibility that, regardless of which one it is, from a geography focus standpoint, that the Rapids could end up getting a Rocky Mountain Cup game out of that, which would be interesting. So if nothing else, Mark, I'm really excited to see a Liga MX team come to Dick's Sporting Goods Park for, I want to say, the first time ever, unless there's some random friendly from like 2004 I'm misremembering. Or
yeah, they played Santos Laguna in some sort of cup match a couple of years ago. And even before that, there was one other team back in the old days of like the Superliga.
Okay, so I think that's it for Leagues Cup. Mark, anything else that we want to say about Austin or the season ending, or shall we move on to?
This has gone on too long. We've belabored what was a totally meaningless game into something meaningful, which I suppose is really our brand, Matt.
Yes, this is why the 100 people who listen to this episode and the 15 people who are still with us, Mark, this is why they're with us here.
We love them. We love those people. We love you.
Yeah, I think it's worth saying, Rabbi, you know, like, listeners, watching a sports team that's bad isn't fun, and then watching your team lose and then consuming sports media around that team while it's losing are not fun. So I just want to say, anybody who even listened to one episode of us this season, we appreciate you. Like,
heroes.
Yes, absolute legends. Heroes. Absolute legends. So Rabbi, let's move on. We had this is something we've done for a couple years now, folks, where at the beginning of the season, we kind of ask 11 questions that we think will define the season, and then we revisit them with our answers to how they ultimately ended up. So we'll go through that. Rabbi, I will start with the first question back to you, which we set as, will the Rapids actually sign a DP, and how will they build a competent attack? Ultimately, we now know that that designated player signing was Giassi Zardes. Mark, how important was Giassi Zardes? Was he worth it from a money standpoint from Columbus? Generally speaking, would you be interested in him returning?
I wouldn't be opposed, but I've heard, I think Joe Samuelson, when he came on the pod, had a few ideas and statements about and based on the reporting, I think, of Brendan Plowen, there are certain triggers that Jossi hit that caused the price to go up on Jossi for this year or for next year. I don't remember. But like basically like Zardes on 200,000 is a pretty good deal. Zardes on 750 is not. And I think that he's probably going to wind up being closer to 750 for the Rapids than 200. So I think that that's like a cut bait situation. You know, for my money, the Rapids need to spend their DP money on a position that's slightly, you'd get slightly more value out of. And by that, I mean, like, you have to pay an obscene amount of money to get a top flight number 9. You have to pay an obscene amount of money to get a top flight number 10. So to that end, and I wouldn't go the Tim Howard route, right? I wouldn't go and sign a DP goalkeeper, even though there was some argument back when they signed Tim Howard as to, like, pound for pound, a goalkeeper money, dollar for dollar, a goalkeeper can actually affect the game enough that overpaying at that position might make sense. For me, I think the Rapids probably should either overpay to go get a defensive midfielder who's amazing, or overpay to get a winger who's amazing, because they're positions where, you know, they have a huge impact on the game, and they're typically not the most expensive player on the field. The other position that I might go for that would be a DP level acquisition would be left back. And I would go to, you know, Europe, or I would go to South America and go get somebody at any of those positions, to really show off. The question I think with left back is like, or left wing is Brian Galvan going to come back? But like, you know, I think we know what Jonathan Lewis is, and we know his limitations. We know that Michael Barrios is only getting older, and so his production is going to continue to decline. We know that there's really nobody at defensive midfield. I mean, I would love a twin pivot with Jack Price at one position and a true defender at the other position. And then you get like an N'Golo Kanté kind of roaming destroyer type guy, or a Jermaine Jones roving destroyer type guy at that position. Although maybe not with the attitude problems that Jermaine Jones had and the health history. But those are my ideas. Like that's where you go out and you spend a DP. Will they do it? You know, I wanted to say no. I wanted to say there's no way they go out and get a DP, but like they did get a DP. You know, they got Giassi Zardes. It took a couple extra months into the season, but they did spend the money on a DP. Was he the dream DP we'd always hoped for? Nah, not really. Did he really do what we wanted? No. I said the over-under on goals for him was 12, and I think Jossi ended the season on 9 or 10, one of the two. I think it was 9. So he underperformed, and he wasn't really what we were hoping for. I think to that end, though, they're going to go out and get one DP in the offseason. I just hope they're not going to dump that money on an expensive number 9. Now, Matthew, I have a question for you. The question I have for you, back earlier in the season, Kellen Acosta at the very beginning of the season got into a contract dispute with the front office over what he was going to be re-signed for. And ultimately it meant that the team was going to ship him off to LAFC for some good assets. In exchange, they went out and got, well, not exactly in exchange, but they also went out and got Brian Acosta, who had formerly been with FC Dallas. Matt, it's not a one-for-one trade, but let's just say that it is. How did the trading of the Acostas look in hindsight?
It was bad. They traded Kellen Acosta, and okay, I'll give you that maybe they thought they needed a little bit more in order to do stuff. So, you know, the Kellen Acosta trade, folks, was ultimately for $1.1 million. Half of that was in game for 2022. I assume a decent chunk of that ultimately at the end of the day is or has gone to Columbus Crew, and then half of that was for 2023. We'll see what Porik does with it. And then there were about $400K in GAM in certain performance metrics. If we look at what Kellen Acosta did this season from an individual standpoint, 28 starts, 23 games played, 2,500 minutes played, 2 goals, 5 assists. If it's just based on what he's typically been with the Rapids, based on individual performances, it's absolutely there. If it's, does LAFC make the playoffs? Does LAFC win MLS Cup? Well, they've already won Supporters Shield. So if it's one of those, then it's there. So the only thing that I could think of, Mark, that's a performance incentive that we don't already know and probably hasn't already been hit. It's, does LAFC win MLS Cup, and does Kellen Acosta make the World Cup roster? I think are the only two possible ones that are out there. And so, okay, if you need a little bit more in order to ensure that you could pay for what Jossy Zardes was going to cost at the end if he was totally high, I could understand it, but I don't think there's any doubt, Mark, this was the single most befuddling trade in a vacuum. I can see where you could argue, based on how Mark Anthony K had been playing, that, you know, that you got that amount of money, you were never going to get that much for a player of his caliber, probably again in MLS. You know, if you have a guy that's on a down spurt from a form standpoint and you can double your money in less than a year with him, absolutely you sell him. Did you still sell Kellen Acosta at top dollar? Absolutely. But you gutted your midfield combined with Cole Bassett not being back, and then Jack Price got hurt. It's almost unfair, Rabbi, for me to say it's a Acosta for Acosta situation, because then as soon as Price went down, you know, only made, I think, what, 11 appearances of the 34, then Brian Acosta got forced into the Jack Price role. And so what we know now is that Brian Acosta is probably your average, you know, replacement for Jack Price. There's some things that he can do pretty well. There's some stuff, obviously, that he doesn't do great of. He's not great passing out of the back. He makes some mistakes defensively that Jack Price, I don't know, would do better in those moments, but would prevent those moments from occurring. I thought gradually he got better in terms of his set piece service, but he's not Jack Price from an attacking standpoint. So really, Mark, your question is, does a combination of Colin Warner, at times Felipe Gutierrez towards the end of the season, maybe Oli Larrazin training, Ralph Prizzo at times, Nicholas Mosqueda before he brought in, does an amalgamation of the role players put together equal Kellen Acosta? Absolutely not. If I Frankenstein all of those players together, I have something that is almost Kellen Acosta. This is the single biggest departure of the season from 21 to 22 that I think ultimately hurt the team. Did they still get top dollar? Yes, but you know, Mark, given what they got for Mark Anthony Kane, what they didn't do in the offseason, that $550K in 2023 GAM, and then whatever out of that $400K is for next coming calendar year, better be pretty damn well spent, because Kellen Acosta was great for the team that finished in the Supporters Shield, and Kellen Acosta is probably going to the World Cup. And the big thing that I still don't understand, Mark, is there was a, I believe the contract that Acosta was on had a team option for 2023. And so why not bet, you know, every single move that the Rapids have made on Acosta has been betting on him, and he's made that work for the club. He's made that work for him. He's made it work for the national team. Why not bet on him? Assume that he's going to the World Cup. He does something great. Pick up the team option and then just wait for somebody to come in for $2-2.5 million in January. I've asked Porik multiple times about this. I've never really understand the logic behind this. This was a bad trade. It ended poorly. Mark, moving on, another move that maybe was a little bit confusing in the long run, or at least bit the Rapids in the long run, was Austin Trusty, who we knew before the season was ultimately a Arsenal player on loan for the Rapids. And the question was, how was the backline going to cope with his midseason departure? Mark, I will couple this into the what happened in terms of Rapids maybe having senioritis, given what we've now seen him do with Birmingham City and the Birmingham City faithful chanting USA, and even some parts of Arsenal Twitter saying to bring him back from his loan in January for the second half of the season. What does that that say about maybe the performance that we didn't get out of Trusty that we needed in the first half of the season, and ultimately what happened in the aftermath with Gustavo Fayasia being a red card machine, Abubakar Keita being injured for the entire season, and Robin Fraser having to just duct tape the back line on a game-by-game basis?
So the question is, like, what do we do going forward without Austin Trusty, effectively? Which is, like, so what we saw this year was there were three options the Rapids kind of dealt with. Option one was to go to a four-man back line with Wilson and Lalas Abubakar. Option two was to give Gustavo Vallecilla a try as either one of the three in the three-back, although I don't think that happened very often. But he often had to step in when Wilson went down with a few knocks and injuries at some point in the season, and when Lalas Abubakar missed a game or two here for yellow card accumulation. And then the third option was you slide Keegan Rosenberry over, who's a right back naturally, and then you put Steven Betashor in at his spot. None of those options or Abubakar Keita seems like a great option for next year, right? I think that Danny Wilson is probably moving into a position next year where he shouldn't be penciled into the lineup every week. You hope that Abubakar Keita comes back from the knee injury and is ready to slot in as one of the three in the back. But we don't really know what we're getting with Keita in terms of, like, open field tackling ability, in terms of speed. You know, what Trusty could do was tackle and run down balls, and he had a lot of ability to run in the midfield. And neither Lalas Abubakar nor Danny Wilson gives you that. So we need another guy. And I think that they're going to go out in the offseason and go get... I think they're either going to cut bait with Gustavo Vallecilla or just get another center back and maybe move on from one of the center backs we currently have other than Lalas Abubakar. But we need another center back. We need someone who can replace some of the open field tackling ability of Austin Trusty, but maybe not a like for like, because, you know, he brought a lot. A lot of Rapids fans will remember mostly just the errors in his final games after he was already slated to move over to England. But if you look before the trade, statistically speaking, and in terms of his individual game performance, he was very good. Austin Trusty was very good. And he was also the main harasser, right? If you look at their stats, both Wilson and Lalas Abubakar, their job was to sit back on the back line and scoop up balls and block balls and clear balls. And it was Trusty who was the mayhem maker. And so, of course, he's going to miss some tackles and get some bad fouls. But, like, overall, Trusty did that very well. So how are we going to cope with him? You know, we're going to need to bring in someone at least half as talented as him. And we hope we click on that one. All right, Matt. Will Michael Barrios be as effective as he was this season next year? Will he be more effective, perhaps because the pieces around him will be more functional, or he'll just have a better season and, you know, kind of go into his age 31 year looking really, really sharp? Or will Father Time be undefeated and catch up a little bit with Michael Barrios, and will he be less effective? What do you think?
Michael Barrios was much less effective in 2022 than he was in 2021, and I think, unfortunately, this is now who he's going to be, unless Robin Fraser relegates him to primarily a super sub role. If we just look at his stat line between last year and this year, in 2021, he had 33 games played, 25 starts, a little over 2,100 minutes, 8 goals, 6 assists, so 14 goal contributions. This year he has 10 goal contributions, 2 goals, 8 assists in 1,911 minutes, so 200 minutes less, and the key factor there was he started many fewer games. He started 19 games this season to 25 last year. On average, he played in every single game this season, 34 appearances, and then on average he had 56 games played. So effectively, he was a starter that was subbed out, and then he was a late substitute as well. I kind of agree with that from a tactic standpoint, Mark, from Fraser's thinking, even though I know a lot of fans were kind of upset about that or would be befuddled when the lineup comes out and see Lewis starting and Barrios not on the right wing, but I can see where the game state settles, especially at home at altitude, to where if you know there's going to be space in behind, Barrios is the single best player to have in that situation, and have him going against the opposing left back when they have 70 minutes under their legs and Barrios is completely fresh, I think is maybe a bigger net positive than having that happen over the course of, you know, 65, 70, or even maybe 90 minutes when Barrios is getting run down. He's 31 years old. He's still pretty fast. But we know Father Time is undefeated. It's only going to get worse. Do I think Barrios could be better next season than he was this season, depending on other things that are going on around him? Absolutely. I think the reality is we're not going to see 8 goals and 6 assists ever again. Best that he ever did in FC Dallas was 5-15, and he had another year that was 6-6 as well. I think 10 goal contributions and however you want to make that up, you know, is fine by me, I think is the most that you can hope for going into next season. I think similar to Danny Wilson, I think he's a start in certain tactical situations, and then he's a 25-20 minute sub as well. It's disappointing but expected that he didn't perform as well as he did this season. I think the bigger issue is that the Rapids didn't get other production from a wide role. I think we now know what Jonathan Lewis's ceiling clearly is, and it's not the potential that he was regarded as having when he was a 20 or a 21-year-old, and I think definitely not having Brian Galvan in a similar role as well certainly hurt that production that would have made up for what Michael Barrios is no longer. Mark, question number 5, will Jack Price once again lead the team as the set piece kings in Major League Soccer? I'll amend that, Mark, to say, what did we miss from Jack Price from a set piece standpoint? What did we make of what Brian Acosta was able to do in his stead? And at times, Felipe Gutierrez in the set piece provider role, and what do we think the Rapids can return to being the set piece kings of Major League Soccer in 2023?
They can if Jack Price is healthy, but Brian Acosta and Felipe Gutierrez are not a substitute for Jack Price in any way, shape, or form. Price had an exceptional season in 2021. Whether that's repeatable is a really good question. I think a lot of this is on Robin Fraser, back to my previous point about going to a twin pivot, or figuring out like how to make sure that Jack Price can be used in the most effective way. There's a lot for Robin Fraser to figure out in the offseason in terms of like, all right, just rolling out a newer, fresher version of the team that was successful in 2021 is not going to work. Because I think that was his theory this year. Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Keep most of the team the same. You know, yeah, we're losing Cole Bassett. Yeah, we lost Sam Vines midseason 2021, but we'll be fine. And the answer is no, dude, we're not fine. You can't do that, right? Like, you've got to find other pieces, and then you have to find tactical and game setup positions that will use those new pieces in the ways that are they're best effectively used for, right? Porik can do, and I'm not putting this on, I'm not saying that 2022's failures were on Robin Fraser, but like, Porik Smith could put all the right players on the field for Robin Fraser, and he could really Anthony Hudson it up, right? He could put the guys on the field and then get terrible performance out of them. Because like one of the things we learned with Robin Fraser was that Anthony Hudson really didn't know how to use the pieces that were in front of him, because there weren't a huge amount of changes in 2019. And Robin Fraser showed a lot of improvement with that team anyways, in 2020 also. So 2020 was the year that I was thinking of with Robin Fraser. So will Price once again lead the team to being the set piece kings? It really depends on how he uses the pieces. I think he will get to be, I'm going to split the difference and sidestep the question sort of. I think he will be better than he was in 2022, but never again. I don't think Jack Price is ever again going to approach having, you know, what was it, the second most assists in Major League Soccer like he did in 2021. All right, Matt, question number 6. Will William Yarborough again be at the top of the league in clean sheets? How did you think of Yarborough's season this year? Were some of the struggles that the team had on him? Where does Yarborough rank in the league in terms of goalkeepers for you? Is he an upper echelon guy? Is he kind of mid-tier? Should the team think about maybe going fishing for something new there?
Will Yarborough did not lead the league in clean sheets, unfortunately. I am scrolling through Mark Transfer Market on the page they have for this to try and find him. Actually, he had 10 clean sheets, which was fifth, which was tied for fourth in MLS. So it would have been, is this for 2022? It is for 2022. Okay, so Andre Blake, who will probably win goalkeeper of the year, Mark, had 15. Sean Johnson, NYCFC, had 14. Gabriel Solina, from Chicago Fire, now Chelsea FC, I believe. And then Zach McMath, former Rapid, current fake Salt Lake goalkeeper, and Will Yarborough both had 10. That being said, Mark, the Colorado Rapids regressed significantly from a defensive standpoint. And if you look at the numbers, it was the advanced analytics. It was not good for William Yarborough, who in terms of goals added had a negative 9.17. That was second to last for goalkeepers who qualified in Major League Soccer. And then if you look at where the main negative for him, it was in shot stopping, was at negative 4.2, also second to last amongst goalkeepers that qualified in MLS this season. So, Mark, if we look at it, almost all of the negative parts that Yarborough had, if you just replace him with an average goalkeeper, the Colorado Rapids would have allowed not quite 8.5 goals fewer from a shot-stopping standpoint. That being said, William Yarborough's single best asset is his communication and his organizational skills, Mark. And where I will push back on the analytics community is there's not yet a really good metric for that. If I just look at the tables they have at American Soccer Analysis, the individual qualities that they have from evaluating a goalkeeper are claiming, fielding, handling, passing, shot stopping, and sweeping. And then you sum all that together, you get the goals added. JT Marcan is very bad. Andre Blake, Sean Johnson, very, very good. There's not really a stat in there, Mark, that accounts for William Yarborough sees something moving that the other team is doing, yells at Danny Wilson or yells at somebody else to change the shape that allows the team to better deal with that, that prevents the opportunity that led from that initial pass moving phase of play from the opponent. There's no metric that tracks that really well. That's the one aspect, that's one of the complexities of soccer to where I feel like the analytics hasn't fully developed itself in the ways that you have for increasingly baseball, football, to a lesser extent, hockey and basketball. So the team regressed defensively significantly. Part of that was William Yarborough did not make some saves in some difficult moments that he would have in 2021. That being said, I still think the biggest issue was what was going on in front of him. Danny Wilson regressed, Lalas Abubakar regressed defensively. As you mentioned earlier, the Rapids didn't really have an answer for what was going to happen post Austin Trusty. They weren't great defensively with Austin Trusty. And then how much of what was a problem this season would have just been paper over by having Kellen Acosta and Jack Price as coverage in front of all of that defense in terms of William Yarborough. I think Yarborough did a yeoman's job at times in games where the defense in front of him was an absolute mess, and the only thing that he could really do was kind of absorb pressure and try and make shots. And there were plenty of games where he came up with big saves that tried to keep the team in games, or where they were getting shellacked. And you know, I think another keeper on another day, Mark, that game in Philly goes from 6-0 to maybe 8 or 9. So there are plenty of games where on the stats line Yarborough was credited with a bunch of goals conceded, in which he did a lot of work to make that scoreline less ignominious. What happens next year, I'm not sure. I still think Yarborough should be the starting goalkeeper for this team, hopefully with a healthy Jack Price, a renewed midfield, and maybe a Abubakar Keita. The defense in front of him is much better and have to be less reliant on him, given he is not an elite shot stopper in MLS, even though I still think there are certain qualities he have that make him a very good goalkeeper in MLS. With that, Mark, we'll move on to question number 7. How will Galvan's injury impact the team? What does this mean for Lewis and expectations for him? Mark, similar to the question about Jack Price, what were the Rapids missing with Galvan being injured? What problems did that present? What can we expect to be better with hopefully a healthy Galvan in 23?
Well, so the interesting thing about Galvan is that he hypothetically, was really going to fit in. The complicated thing with Galvan was that the team was playing in a 5-3-2, where Galvan was often the left wing in that situation. But he's very attacking, and he made a lot more sense in like a 5-2-3, where he was like the front guy in the top left, which made him kind of like, you know, the ideal situation would be to have the front three be Galvan, Rubio, and Lewis, or Galvan, Rubio, and Barrios. But that was like too much of a good thing. It was like a lot of fast guys who were very attacking, and it left some holes in the defense. That being said, I think we all really liked what Galvan offered. The other thing was that he was a really nice left-footed player who could play on the right side and cut in and do some really neat, dangerous things, which was really, really fun. And we wanted to see that this season, and we didn't get to. Will he be back next year at the same level that he was at the end of last year? Boy, that is like the $64,000 question. It is really, really important to this team that they get back someone in the attack who's really dangerous. A guy who has the upside of like Max when Max is really, really clicking, but Max didn't do it very often. Like Max had like a few moments, like for instance, in this last game against Austin, Max had a few really nice moments, but like he had some burst out of the midfield kind of moments where he put Austin on their heels, which I really liked. But they were few and far between. You need those kind of guys. And I think one of the biggest problems with the Rapids this past year is they didn't have a game-changing player, right? They didn't have a guy who would receive the ball on one touch, accelerate through the midfield in 30 yards, and force the defense to like reorganize itself in total chaos. Nobody struck fear into the hearts of opponents. The only guy who really did consistently was Jonathan Lewis. And Jonathan Lewis had a great ability to like dribble at you at a million miles an hour and then shank the shot really badly. Overwhelmingly, he actually did a pretty decent job of putting things on target. But I digress. Anyways, point being, I think Galvan could come back and be pretty effective. But I still do think that this team is looking at a bunch of wing options that are like unsavory characters, right? Barrios is going to decline. Sam Nicholson was never really a great option. Jonathan Lewis isn't particularly consistent anymore, and never really has been at scoring. Galvan's a big question mark too. So like we've got a lot of wing players where I think you bring back Lewis and you give him the start, but I think everybody else is kind of an open question mark. Matt, when it comes to homegrowns for the coming year, additionally, when we think about Philip Mayaka, our draft pick from the MLS Super Draft, are any of the guys that are out there, Yaya Toure, Darren Yapi, Sebastian Anderson, whose last name I couldn't remember before, Abe Rodriguez, any other guys, are there any homegrowns that are likely to make an impact in 2023?
So Mark, I'll start with the question of were any homegrowns going to make an impact this season? And the short answer is no. Darren Yapi spent most of the time in with Rapids 2. I do think he worked his way into the first team. I think it's a fair question. Could he be a backup striker, or at the very least, I think next year he could train regularly with the first team, at times start with Rapids 2, at times be the first striker off the bench for the first team. Ollie Larraz hurt the whole season. It was really a lost year for him. I would have loved to see if he could plug some of the gaps and some of the issues going on in the midfield. Mike Edwards, a career, was a Rapids 2 guy. He is now with Switchbacks, who, correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, I believe are in the playoffs, so we'll see what he does this season. But the fact that he's been 2 years with the club, and it was a season on loan with the USL Championship team, and then pretty much an entire season as a starter for Rapids 2, I wonder what's that saying about his potential and his ceiling and trust from the first team coaching staff, given how many issues there were at center back. Torre, you know, was, I thought, the best player for Rapids 2 this season. I think similarly could take a step forward, but next year, but again, he had the injury. I can't remember if it was an MCL. I can't keep track of all the knee injuries on this team, Mark. So I think it's a fair question. When, if and when do we see him for 2023? Obviously, I thought he was fantastic for Rapids 2, just like Yaya Torre, just like Darren Yapi, I think was ready to take a step forward for the team in 2023. That got blown up. Ralph Prizzo comes in. Mark, I think, had a couple really good moments. Obviously, Robin likes him and knows him from his time in Toronto, but we've seen guys that are for the first time embedded in with the Rapids. It takes time for Robin Fraser to trust them. Ollie LaRoz came back from whatever third division German team he was with in the academy setup and trained the entire second half of the year and got better and better before Robin Fraser was ready to say, let's give this guy a homegrown contract. And, you know, and then it was training, and then it was a few stop starts, and then it was get loaned out and play very well at times for a pretty good team in the USL Championship last season with San Diego Loyal, because Landon Donovan really wanted him on the team. And then it was, okay, what can Ollie do? Well, he's not going down to Rapids 2. He might be the first midfielder off the bench. He gets hurt. So maybe this year was just Ralph Prizzo has to prove himself, and then maybe he gets some sniffs next year. Abroad was pretty much the starter for Rapids 2. I did get to see him get that start after Yarbrough was out in the Portland Timbers game. I thought he made a lot of steps forward. I think this year's Rapids 2 season was probably, for an individual, was the most significant for him. I don't think he's unseating Yarbrough anytime soon. Could he be the backup next year? Possibly. Sebastian Anderson, could say the same thing about him for the other Rapids 2 guys. And then Abubakar Keita, hurt the whole year. Who knows? And then the last guy, 8 homegrowns, 1 generous Adidas, is Philip Mayaka. Mark, every time I've looked at him in Rapids 2, I'm not particularly impressed. I'm not sure his ceiling is any more than the last guy on the bench for an MLS team. And it might be he runs out his generation Adidas contract and then signs with a not great USL Championship team. So homegrowns, unfortunately, were not able to make an impact. I think I'd have a very different answer to that question if Torre doesn't get hurt with a month to go in the season, and if Ollie LaRoz isn't out for most of the season. Hopefully it looks better. If nothing else, I'd hope a healthy Ollie LaRoz, a healthy Darren Yapi, eventually a recovered Torre are able to be contributors for the first team in 2023. I think the other guys are TBD depending on other roster moves. Mark, let's move on to question number 9. On that note, how will Rapids 2 affect the first team? Mark, what significance from a first team perspective did Rapidos have in their inaugural MLS Next Pro year?
This year they had like no impact. What they did was effectively consolidate like the U17 team and the U23 team, and the guys who used to get loaned out to the Switchbacks or to Memphis into one team. In a good year, they allow for some of those guys to be like at DSGP and then ultimately not get, you know, onto the final 18-man roster for a weekend, and then they get to play down at DU the next day. And they also get to train with the Rapids senior team. But, like, I don't think there were a lot of guys who were really a threat from R2 to play for the senior team this year. They were, like, very, very few. It was Yapi and Torre, and that was it, right? And then there was that one game where Clint Irwin wasn't able to go, and William Yarbrough wasn't able to go, and so they threw Abe Rodriguez in there. And I think that was at Seattle, right?
At Portland. Yarbrough got hurt. That was the red card, or not the red card, that was the penalty he gave up where I think he took a knee to the head. So yes.
Yeah, and so like that's the meaning of R2, which is like when you're in desperation, you have a couple guys who are an option. I hope next year it means more. You know more about R2. It's unfortunate that I got this question. So if you have anything to add, please do. But like, you know more about R2 than I did, because I didn't get to see any games, because the quality of the streams and the publicity about what time the games were was unbelievably bad. And the statistics on the MLS Next Pro website are awful. I mean, like, they're not necessarily accurate. And even when they are accurate, they're counting stats, minutes, goals, assists. That's pretty much it. Like you just can't
you can't really know that much about MLS Next Pro. So for me, it's been an overall downgrade over having those players just straight up play in USL. But maybe in year two, it grows a little bit, it improves a little bit, and maybe they put a little bit more resource into it. Do you have anything to add on that note before we turn it back to you?
No, Mark, the front office and the coaching staff really clearly see MLS Next Pro from a development standpoint. Developing the individual and having individuals make steps forward and progress in their career and become better players supersedes the actual results on the field. And in that regard, I would say it was a success for R2 in that it was an incubator for the high potential players that they have. Some of the kids coming up from the U17s program who've kind of been, they've had a couple different programs for them. I thought they got a really good taste of a more competitive medium level. You know, what was missing in the, you know, in the MLS reserves or in the U20, the U23 team, as you said, Mark. And like I said, I think it was a chance for Darren Yapi, Yaya Toure, Abroad to get regular minutes in ways that may helped them get a step forward. I think it's still a fair question whether or not they would have been better down with the switchbacks or in another good situation for them in the USL Championship. But there's no doubt in my mind the Darren Yapi, Yaya Toure injury notwithstanding, Abe Rodriguez, Mike Edwards are better for the Rapids first team today than they were at the beginning of the season because of the playing time and the experience that they got in Rapids 2. And I think that'll be the most significant thing. I'm really hoping and I do believe that that at least two of those guys that I've name dropped in terms of that it got progress from Rapids 2 are going to be able to contribute something net positive to the first team next year as a result of that.
All right, Matt. Here's my question for you. Can the veterans, Warner, Betashore, Moore, get it down when called upon and make an impact? Is this Drew Moore's final season? Matt, I think you can answer that one pretty definitively.
This was Drew Moore's final season. Unfortunately, I'm very sad to see him go. But Mark, I think I agree. It was probably the right time. And I think it's a fair question whether or not he was just being, you know, a guy hanging around, living the vibes life, and then trying to be a good guy in the locker room. This past season, he wasn't great in the minutes that he did have, obviously. And when he was brought on, it was usually out of desperation or specifically needing to have three center backs with a guy who could head the ball and then just be composed. In ways that Gustavo Villasia was not, in ways that Austin Trusty with his senioritis was not. Stephen Betashore, Mark, I thought looked absolutely fantastic. You know, he played a couple different roles. He was on the right, he was on the left, even though he's naturally a left back. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. He does not look his age. He will, Mark, in February be turning 36. There is a team option for him. I would absolutely pick that up. He's a great guy in the locker room. He's a really calm veteran. He's really composed in everything. He's been a great resource to a Sebastian Anderson, to a Jackson Travis as well. He does his job. He works his butt off and everything. He has got that old dog in him, and this old dog is learning and executing on new tricks. Stephen Betashore has been absolutely fantastic for me, Mark. I'd want him back. Even if he does next year what Drew Moore did this year, he's absolutely worth every single penny that the Rapids are going to pay him next year on the team option. We know what Colin Warner is. We clearly know what his ceiling and what his floor are, Mark. He's 34. He'll be 35 in June next season. Let me just pull up his season stats. So he had 6 starts, 18 appearances for 634 minutes and just the one goal. He's a good fill-in when you can put other stuff around him. He works really hard and does everything that he can. Would I be okay with the team bringing him back on the veteran minimum to, again, be the Drew Moore of 2023? I'd be okay with that. My bigger question is Robin Fraser's tendency to lean towards veterans that he trusts in and has a long-standing relationship with, does that supersede getting in the way of a kid who's trying to break into the first team? I would not bring back Colin Warner if it meant that it was taking away significant minutes from Ollie LaRaz. I think Warner did the best that he could given the situation in the midfield that I've already documented, and I do not blame him. We know what he is. He is not at fault for not being something that he was supposed to be. I'm not mad at Colin Warner because he could not be Kellen Acosta or Jack Price this past season, and I still think that he can be a contributor, albeit in smaller spurts and in very specific situations where you ask him to do one thing really well, another thing okay, and then one or two times another thing. In those situations, I think he can have a role on this team, in addition to just being a locker room vibes guy, veteran present in training in 2023. Last question that we have, Mark, that we'll both tackle. Will the team finally do something in the playoffs? Mark, unless something drastically changes that sees Vancouver and like three other teams be suspended or, you know, disqualified for, I don't know, breaking some FIFA rules or roster something or other, I don't think the Rapids are going to be in the playoffs this weekend. So will the Rapids do something in the playoff? No, they will do nothing because they will not make the playoffs. Mark, this is a disappointment, and I think unfortunately it kind of highlights, I think it's a fair question that Rapids fans could ask, was last year going to be the best that it's going to be? And given the limitations this team has in terms of recruiting the top talent like a Lucas Celarayan, like a Sebastian Driussi, a Carlos Vela, a top striker, a top winger, and anything, I think it's a fair question, you know, what that, you know, this team's ceiling is pretty well defined. You know, the as much as I think, Mark, you and I both enjoyed watching Montreal and are glad that they've made it, I think their ceiling is pretty well defined when it comes to the playoffs. And I think just the notion that they're going to get hot at the right time and play the right teams like they did in 2010 and somehow find themselves in MLS Cup, that's increasingly been more and more improbable. It's teams that are well coached, that have a lot of depth, that have a really good center back, that have star players, and then get the job done. If we look at, you know, just the teams that in the MLS 3.0 era have won, it's the Atlantas, it's the Seattles. I'll say LAFC because they've won two Supporters Shield as well. And then if we're looking at, you know, it was Celarayan being fantastic for Columbus during COVID. And then last year it was, you know, it was NYCFC who had, you know, Tati Castellanos, who ultimately could end up being a $20 million striker. I don't think the Rapids are recruiting the types of players and building the types of rosters that have been MLS Cup finalists, MLS Cup winners. Can they win a game? Maybe, but, you know, it highlights that I think increasingly, Mark, this team's going to have a ceiling and will have ultimately their playoff efforts will end in disappointment and heartbreak.
It's hard to know how they're going to reconstruct. It's easy to know that they will not reconstruct, to your point, Matt, the way we would dream of them reconstructing, which is spending big money on a big signing. You know, back in the day, some of the supporters group from C38 used to joke about the Rapids going out and getting Gareth Bale's and Zlatan's, back when it seemed like no MLS team could get Gareth Bale or Zlatan. And then, of course, MLS teams got Gareth Bale and Zlatan, and the Rapids don't seem to ever be in that hunt. Two questions kind of coming off of that. One, if they're never going to compete at that level, can they ever win MLS Cup? And question two, if they're not going to go out and buy at that level and they can't get into the playoffs again next year, then this is really the most important question that no offense, Matt, I'm just going to asking, you've said a million brilliant things today, but I'm going to ask the most important question for the podcast today, as of course we hit the final minutes of the podcast, right? The most important question of this team is, if they're not going to spend the big money and they're not going to make the playoffs next year, then at the end of 2023, are we blowing it up? Are Robin Fraser and Porik Smith on the hot seat if they can't get it done with mid-priced players? Because that's always going to be a problem, right? If you're not going to have the highest paid roster in MLS, can you get it done, get into the playoffs, and make a good run? And if you can't, you know, what does that mean for the future of this franchise? That's the $64,000, the real $64,000 question. I think that's
the league minimum salary. So I guess, you know, Mark, you kind of, I think we've hit on everything that went wrong. I guess there's some general stuff we could look at for the offseason. The expansion draft is coming up, folks. I don't have the, it'll be a couple weeks before that happens. That'll be after MLS Cup. But Mark, there's 30 Rapids players that were on a first team roster this year, homegrowns and GA players who haven't graduated. I don't think Mayock has graduated or automatically protected. So slash out those 8+1 players to make it 21. Drew Moore is obviously retiring, so that reduces it down to 20. And then teams that are eligible for losing players in the expansion draft, basically anybody who didn't lose a player to Charlotte last year, there's 23 of those teams, including the Rapids, can protect 12 players after that. So the Rapids will have 20 players potentially eligible. They'll be able to protect 12 of those. So, you know, we could throw out, you know, Clint Irwin, Colin Warner, Felipe Gutierrez, Mark, probably not being protected. Mark, are you, yes or no, are you worried about the expansion draft? I say no, I don't think a Rapids player gets picked.
Not even a second. And anybody who does get picked, I'm not particularly worried about. I mean, this last year, Charlotte didn't really do anything with it. They picked some players and then ultimately just moved them right on. The one I can think of that was really befuddling was Ismail Tajiri Shradi, who they picked in the expansion draft and then traded on to LAFC and didn't really do anything with, which was such a mystery to me. So, no, the Rapids have nothing to worry about.
Mark, Giassi's artist back with the Rapids on opening day. Yes or no? Is he a DP? If so, yes or no?
I don't think he's back. I think it's going to be more expensive for the Rapids to re-sign him than for them to let him go to some other team. And I don't think he goes to another team for much of a high price. He's going to be one of those, you know, classic free agent veterans who is too expensive to be re-signed by his own team, so winds up with a contract that's kind of like unimpressive somewhere else, a la Kai Kamara, who had a great season this year for Montreal. The dude has played for every team in the league, it seems like, so...
I think Zardes is back, Mark. I don't think he's back as a DP. I think they work it out to a term that makes sense, but also a number that makes sense. I think 700K would be totally fine with that. Mark, do you bring back Felipe Gutierrez? Yes or no?
I do, but I just don't think he's a great addition to the team, but he doesn't really move the needle. Like, you know, if our midfield next year is Jack Price, Felipe Gutierrez, and Brian Acosta, you're going to be hosting this podcast with somebody else a lot more often, just because I don't want to talk about it. You know, it's going to be like, you know, do I go for a hike in the mountains this weekend with my son, or do I watch this meaningless Rapids game with a midfield that is just boring as snail snot? Because no offense, but that's what it's going to be. Those three are just not the most exciting midfielders in the league. By a long shot.
I'd bring him back for less than 500K if you could get him and you could make it a team-friendly deal from a money, and then where, if given his injury history, Mark, if you could get out of it, so maybe like a one-year deal with two team options, then maybe some performance incentives, that's be something that I'm open to. So if I'm putting my money where my mouth is, do I think Felipe Gutierrez is back with the team next year? I will say no. Mark, there's a $1 million option for a 50% ownership rights to left back Lucas Estevez back with the team next year. Yes, no.
I think Estevez, it's a good question. I mean, the real question is, like, how much do they think that Galvan is ready to step in? But because I think Estevez was not necessarily going to be the starting left back to start this season. God, I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe they think they can do better, especially for the price that is being forced upon them. I think Estevez is not back. What about you?
I think it depends on how negotiations go with Zardes and the timing of that, because then if they don't bring him back, then you need to go out and get another striker. We know that's going to be more expensive, so then those funds need to get allocated. Obviously, re-signing Giassi Zardes, unless that adds to the transfer fee to Columbus because of the various incentives clause or something, and I don't think that'd be like 100K or something like that, Mark. So I think if negotiations move quickly and well financially from a Zardes perspective, I think that's money that you could allocate towards Estevez. I'm not ready to predict whether or not. I think if Estevez is not back, I disagree with you, Rabbi, on Galvan stepping in there. I think Galvan will be further up the field. I think the Rapids might go out and try and get another young player, maybe try and go after a distressed asset, young homegrown from another MLS team. Or worst case scenario, I think maybe you bet on Markanich if he's proven something in training that we just didn't see from him on the field in actual competitive games. Rabbi, how much money would the team have to offer you in January for Rubio for you to part ways with him?
$3 million? I mean, he's a very valuable asset. I wouldn't want to get rid of him, even though he's getting older. I don't think anybody in the league would offer more than 2.5. I don't think I would take less than 3.5 because the thing for the Rapids is he's irreplaceable. I mean, they just can't. No amount of money the Rapids are going to spend out there is going to bring in a guy who's going to be. Now the challenge with Rubio is really effectively that can he duplicate his production? And the other piece that is difficult for the Rapids is can he do it in a season that is meaningful, right? Like, I don't remember what the exact stat was, but Rubio has been good for the Rapids when they've been bad, right? When they've been, I think 2019 and 2022 are his best seasons, and those are both lost seasons for the Rapids. What do you think, Matt?
I was going to say $2 million was going to be the absolute minimum. Somebody calls and doesn't offer you at least $2 million. If I'm Porrick Smith, I'm hanging up the phone. I take 2.5, depending on what the total assets were and maybe what other moves that you have going on. And again, that might depend on where you are from a timeline standpoint with making a decision on Zardes, bringing Zardes back, and then the same thing for Estevez. I think there's a lot of moving parts from a financial standpoint in some of the other moves that would be a variable, but less than two, I'm not even talking about it. 2.5, let's have a conversation. Like you said, Mark, 3.5, Rubio's gone. Let's move on to general offseason moves, Mark. Mark, who's your MLS Cup winner? What does the USMNT do in Qatar? Who wins the World Cup?
All right. Who is going to win MLS Cup? Well, that is a really good question, and I'm not really sure that I feel confident in any of the possible answers, because the consensus favorite, I think, would be Philadelphia. That's my take. I think they're stronger top to bottom than LAFC, and in a final meeting, that would make a lot of sense. But having watched them play just the other day and watched them for the last couple weeks, I really like Austin. My dark horse for MLS Cup is Nashville, because Hani Mukhtar, if you just turn him up to 11, is real trouble. So, I'll say the boring answer is Philadelphia and the exciting answer is Nashville. Matt, who's your favorite for MLS Cup?
Philadelphia Union will win MLS Cup at LAFC, and they will do so while LAFC outplays them. Not quite, Joe Willis 4.5 XG and then, 15 shots on goal like Nashville had the other day, but I think LAFC will play better, but then will lose MLS Cup. Mark, USMNT and then World Cup predictions.
Are we literally not going to talk between now and the World Cup? That's not possible, right? We'll meet before then.
Okay. Is that a commitment to us doing another pod?
We don't have to, but I think
I thought we were going dark after this. I need a break. I'm going to try and get the Marcelo Balboa interview this week, and I'm going to try and get Drew Moore next week, and then find me on the beach. And by beach, I mean the beach at A Basin.
No, sounds good. Sounds good. Apparently you're going to cut this, right?
We're leaving it in, Mark. But okay, just your initial one
in,
with your initial predictions with permission to change it, and maybe we'll do a pod if we'll do a pod if Sam Bynes makes the roster. How about that?
Oh, that's exciting. All right, I'm gonna be Mr. Negativity, the dark cloud in everybody's exciting moment. We crash out and do not make it past the group stage in Qatar. And the winners in Qatar is Peru. No, that doesn't make any sense. That is so far off and such a difficult question, in terms of who is likely to be the best team in Qatar. You know, I mean, the consensus favorite, like, every year when you go through things would automatically be, like, Germany. Like, if you were going to be lazy, you would just say Germany's going to win it or Brazil's going to win it. At least this year you can't say that about Italy, right? God, I think if you were going to say something really crazy and say something really interesting was going to happen, I think you could make a cogent argument for why this is the year that a team from South America wins it again. Maybe this is the year that Argentina does it. Yeah, fine. That's my fun call. I'm going to say Argentina wins the World Cup,
man. All right, Messi wins the World Cup. Give me Brazil, Mark, and I think they'll beat Belgium in the final. I think the U.S. gets out of the group, but they do it with zero style points and by the hair on Christian Pulisic's chinny chin chin, in that it will not be deserving. And I think they'll play a much better team, maybe not a contender, but, you know, certainly like Belgium in 2014, where Belgium was at that time. I think it'll be the quality of the opponent they get in the first round. They will lose and they will massively be outperformed in that game as well. Rabbi, I think it does it for us. As I mentioned, folks, so we've got a couple interviews in the works, but if you don't hear from us in a couple weeks, that is certainly possible. But Rabbi, let's get out of here.
We are sponsored by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves, makers of custom-made kits for whatever purposes you want, your own team, or for a bachelor party, something fun, something festive. Something creative, something colorful with a neat collar, whatever you like, Icarus has it for you. And Roughneck Scarves, they've got all sorts of great fuzzy neckwear, from the silks to the thick wool. They've got some good stuff for the World Cup. You may want to check that out. They also make custom stuff if you have an order 50 or larger. Matt, tell them how to hit us on the socials, how to read our written stuff, like my position-by-position breakdown of how the Colorado Rapids were in 2022 for holdingthehighline.substack.com, and how to reach us in the off-season via email.
Yeah, so find us on all the Twitter accounts, at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, at holding, at Rapids96Podcast. Check us out on all the websites, Pittsburgh Soccer Now, LastWordOnSports.com, /soccer, and holdingthehighline.substack.com. Find us an email at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Paid Highliners, you can still submit your evergreen paywall content suggestion, as I'm sure we'll get bored and need something to write about or pot about. So if you want that, this would be the great time for you to do it. Listeners, in the words of Richard Fleming, bye-bye for now.
Peace.